An insider speaks to the people. Martin North, John Adams and Wilson Tsai, in the interests of the people. Hello, guys.
Hello. How are you going?
Very good to see you. And Wilson, welcome to the interests of the people. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, pleased to meet you in your studio.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So I think we're going to have a really interesting conversation today, Wilson, because you've been on the inside and you've seen how the regulators work. Right. And so I thought what we could perhaps do is have a little bit of a discussion around that, but specifically start with, you know, a bit of your history and, you know, how you've come to the point that you've come to. And then John and I will perhaps take the conversation a bit further with you.
My educational background is in I have a degree in mathematics, and then I did a PhD in theoretical physics, and for about 10 years I had a career at Australian National University in astrophysics and plasma physics. Then in the early 80s, when we were trying to get support for research, I came up with a lot of economic arguments. Those were the days of the sunrise industry. Bob Hawke said economics is important, and so on and so forth. So I eventually got interested in economics, and I took university courses with a lot of public servants in Canberra in economics. And eventually I joined the, in those days, New South Wales Institute of Technology as a lecturer in applied mathematics. And there I developed courses in economics and finance as applied mathematics. And while I was consulting for Macquarie Bank in teaching them how to use calculators to do discounted cash flow analysis and so forth, I got job offers, you know, firstly to trade in the foreign exchange. And then I didn't like that because the situation was very chaotic. So I told the headhunter in those days, they're called, I need an office. I can't think in the noisy room. So I rejected the job. And a week or two later, they rang me up and said, look, there's a job at Bankers Trust, you know. And there, you know, they said they'll promise you an office. So I went into funds management at BT. And I was involved in the finance industry for about 10 years, doing basically quantitative analysis, you know, investment funds management. And then I went to work for William Mercer as asset consultant. After learning about investing, I was working as a consultant for investment advice to mainly superannuation funds. And after that, in the early 2000s, for 10 years, I worked for the regulators, 3 years with ASIC, and 6 years with APRA, and last year was with the Australian Treasury, and I was there as a senior advisor to the Cooper Review into superannuation. And now I'm basically doing my own thing. I consult part-time for Industry Super Australia. And otherwise, I'm retired.
Well, wow. So from science to economics to regulatory stuff, and, you know, a very interesting journey that you've taken.
Yeah.
So, but you've been very critical of the regulators, haven't you? Particularly, I guess, RBA, APRA, and ASIC. So what was it that you saw while you were there that's created this sense of criticism that you now actually express?
Well, basically, I did a lot of research, look at the databases, and produce a lot of analysis. And it was the way that the reception of what I was doing that made me ask a lot of questions. Like, for example, in 2006, 2007, I did a lot of analysis on the mortgage lending situation. And I saw that there was a lot of expansion in mortgages and credit at a rate which was very fast compared to historical averages, and that sort of research results were basically unwelcomed. In other words, they didn't seem to want to know, or certainly didn't want to publicize that information. And of course, in those days, I haven't had time to reflect on what I was doing, because I was just doing a job, as it were. And in the last several years, I've thought through about my experiences and reflect on the significance of that. And I realized that there was something, you know, seriously wrong with my expectations of what a regulator should be doing and what the regulators were actually doing.
So one point I just want to clarify for the audience, Wilson. So when you were at APRA, you were one of the senior researchers at APRA, and is it fair to say that since your time at APRA, the research department at APRA was shut down?
Correct. In 2006, I was temporarily the head of research, and I was basically trying out the position. And as a head of research, I didn't like the sort of work I had to do, which is sitting in committees. I preferred to actually spend a lot of time looking at the data and getting to grips with what the financial services industry was doing. And it's for that reason that I didn't think that they were all that serious about research. And a couple of years after I left, they realized that they didn't really want the research, and so that's why they shut down the research department.
Sure. So another question I have is, before the GFC, when you were doing some of this research and you saw that the growth of mortgage lending was quite fast. Now, you've probably seen Martin and I on this channel, and Martin's got his own channel, where we've talked about, the data that I look at says that we have the biggest debt bubble in Australian history in terms of credit, household debt to disposable income, household debt to GDP, etc. A whole bunch of metrics where you can say it's at a historical high, and then you've got a debt bubble in terms of globally. So we think that the problems post-GFC have exacerbated, and obviously you were looking at the data pre-GFC. So what's your broad assessment about the Australian economy today, and what role do you think, APRA, ASIC, RBA have played in the predicament that Martin and I sort of have been communicating publicly?
Well, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding what the regulators, are doing, because it seems to me the regulators are there to protect or stabilize the industry, the financial services industry. Its main brief is not really to serve the consumers or the community at large. So in other words, it's there to do everything it could to maintain a stable financial system, which meant that you don't want banks and financial institutions to fail. While they say that they allow a few, they're not to prevent failures, they're doing everything to help the industry, if you like. And I guess the rationale is that if there is an instability in the financial system, then everybody suffers, right? But at the end of the day, basically people are sacrificed by that particular philosophy.
So one of the points there, of course, is APRA has said in the past they would prefer a small number of large players rather than smaller players because of the financial stability perspective, despite the fact, as the Productivity Commission recently showed in one of their reports, that reduces competition and that disadvantages customers of the banking system. So in other words, we've got the dial set to financial stability at all costs rather than actually introducing competition into the banking system and a focus on banking to provide outcomes that are right for customers.
Yep, absolutely correct. And what APRA is doing is in fact, behaving like a financial trade guild, right?
Right.
It's sort of getting people to behave in a uniform manner by their prudential standards and so on and so forth. And in effect, it's creating a oligopoly. But by creating a huge quantity of guidance, standards, reporting requirements and so on, it creates a barrier to smaller players. They're daunted by the so-called regulatory burden. And so the result is Australia's got a financial oligopolistic setup.
Mm.
So the major banks and the major financial institutions have become extremely powerful, and the underlying economic rationalism that created all that wants the financial service industry to be deregulated so that they can pursue whatever it is in a free market philosophy, right? Except that an oligopoly is not the free market that we read in textbooks.
Mm.
But that's not how the government, the bureaucrats, think. They think like the textbook.
So, I mean, this takes us right into the Royal Commission, right? Because the Royal Commission over the last year or so was turning over the coals in the financial system. And I think the preliminary report was actually quite powerful because they observed a whole bunch of behaviours driven by greed, driven by profit, not being driven by outcomes of customers, all of that sort of stuff, right?
Yep.
And they touched on the regulators, and basically the regulators were actually not really doing their job either, right?
Yep.
But somehow between the preliminary report and the final report, we seem to have lost in translation those fundamental thoughts about the need to change the way the system works. What do you think went on there?
Well, again, I mean, from my experience with a government review, most of these reports gather a lot of evidence from hearings, from research, and so on. And that's mainly what an inquiry or a review does. But the bulk of the reports are written by the Treasury officials, because the view is that everybody serves, at the end of the day, the government in terms of finances. So the Australian Treasury is the ultimate coordinator, if you like. So in other words, all this information, research and whatnot, has only a benefit if it affects government finances, how government allocate financial resources. So that's why the Treasury eventually typically write these reports, because they are the ones that actually got to act on these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so quite often the recommendations do not necessarily follow logically from the findings, because that's how the Treasury regard as the useful contribution, if you like, from the inquiries and the reports. So yeah, I mean, the Hayne Royal Commission is a key example. The evidence points to in a certain direction, but the Treasury doesn't want to see it in that direction, so it writes its own conclusions.
So Wilson, what I hear you say is, effectively in a deregulated free market supposed system, the banks in the financial sector have all the power. They just want to grow their loan book. They want to be profitable, increase profits. That's pushing the debt into the system. Because they have that all that market power, the regulators like ASIC and APRA are very weak in sort of enforcing whether it's responsible lending or prudential standards to keep the system in some sort of balance. And yet there's an incentive from Treasury and the Commonwealth to keep the show going because the Treasury wants economic growth, the government wants economic growth, they want tax revenue. So it seems to me that there's an alignment of incentives to keep the bubble going, and there is no way institutionally to try to bring the bubble into some sort of harmony. Would that be a fair summation?
Yes. The idea is that we have a free market, a profit-driven economy, and driven essentially by the major banks, where they want to lend determines the structure of the economy, right? And basically, they're allowed to do that under the free market principle, economic rationalism. And the economists say that we don't know when something's too much. Like Guy Debelle said the other day that he doesn't know how much debt is too much debt, right? So this is the mindset. And then from a sort of neoclassical economic type approach, if it falls over, then we now have the Keynesian economics come into play. So we basically the theory. I'm saying this not just in Australia. This particular concept is not invented in Australia. It was invented in America and the United Kingdom. They follow this idea that the market should be allowed to roam free. That the way that the economy develops is entirely driven by where you make the most profit, right? And when it falls over, then it's the time for government to intervene, right? So you have this system of, in the good times, you know, the bank collects profits. In the bad times, the government intervenes with taxpayers' money, right? And Greenspan several years ago explained this. He said, we can't tell when there's a bubble until it burst. And then he said that it was much, he said that there's people have tried to prevent bubbles in the past, they never succeeded. And he said that it's much better to just let the bubble run its course and then clean up afterwards. Mm. So that is the system we have. A continual cycle of crisis, you know, a sort of bailout, bail-in, or whatever, right? And then let the whole thing repeat, rinse and repeat.
Right. So, but interestingly, of course, after the GFC, then they went into the quantitative easing and the printing of the money and dropping interest rates.
Yep.
And we're now in the situation where it looks as though central banks prefer to try and keep the bubble going rather than let it crash and cycle. So something has changed, hasn't it, in the last few years in terms of their thinking?
Well, I'm not sure that they ever want something to crash.
Right.
Right? Mm. It's just that, like the GFC happened, because they didn't see it coming. Right. If they saw it coming, they would have done something about it. So now they've sort of learned, right, that things could happen. And so they're a bit more cautious, and therefore they intervene earlier. So now you see that in the Australian housing situation, you know, prices are falling, right? And so now they're easing interest rate and loosening lending standards in order to prevent the bubble from completely bursting.
Sure. My question to you, Wilson, is because you worked inside the regulators like ASIC and APRA, do you think they know we have a bubble and that the bubble is the biggest on record statistically? Or do you think they are oblivious to the obvious thing that Martin and I can see and now most of our viewers can see?
Well, I personally don't think they understand the concept at all. Because
the concept
of a bubble.
Of a bubble, right.
Right, because it's not in the textbooks, right? And you read all the research papers from the Reserve Bank, right? They all are sort of developments of the textbook model, right? And I know for sure that APRA does not, as I said, do research at all now. And when I did probably the first bit of macroeconomic type research for the housing credit situation in 2006-07, there was about the anything that remotely macroeconomic, right? So APRA doesn't do anything macroeconomic. So all those guidance that we have seen, for example, recently or the past, I suggest it's probably a sort of discussion between the major banks and APRA as to, you know, what is the best situation for the industry.
Mm.
So if they have these discussions and say, well, we should hold back lending a bit for now, then they will come out with a announcement. So in other words, there's no, the government does not intervene anymore. I mean, the government, there's nobody in government or the regulator actually said, this is where we want the economy to go. This is what we think is right.
So who's driving the ship then? So if the government's not telling the industry or telling key sectors in the economy, this is where the country's going, well, who's determining where the country's going? Who's guiding the bubble if it's not APRA and ASIC or Treasury or RBA?
I would say the short answer is, the major banks, right?
Right.
The major banks created the bubble in the first place, right? The way that they created the housing bubble, right, in increasing the amount of lending, is through their credit risk modeling, right? They run the internal rating model, internal rating based models, by arguing that the housing lending is much lower risk than business lending. And so the housing credit has given, you know, half to a third or even less. There are risk weighting of as low as below 20%, right? So basically dollar for dollar, right, you can lend five times more to housing than you can lend to business. So the situation over the last two or three decades has been business lending has gone down from, you know, over 60% now to about 30%, and whereas mortgages or housing lending has got reversed, it's come from 30% to over 60%. So that's how the fuel from the housing bubble was created by the bank changing the risk weighting.
Right, but that is interesting because that's the Bank for International Settlements, right? Which is effectively the banker's banker, right? So what you're actually saying is that our economy locally is being driven by those international rules set by the central banker's bankers, right? The Financial Stability Board, of course, is also there in terms of actually trying to define the way that financial stability is working. So what you're actually saying is that our economy is fundamentally reacting to some international rules which are imposed here in Australia on our banking system, and our local regulators basically are just mirroring what those international rules are saying. Is that a fair summation?
Absolutely correct.
Right.
That's correct. Yeah.
So we got that. But also, what you're saying, just to be clear, is within the domestic scene, the power the financial power is in with the banks, and they're driving the show domestically. So, is it fair to say there's a combination of international rules but domestic financial power out of the banks that's driving this ship forward, and no one can recognize there's a bubble, and it's going to blow up in one form or another. And when it blows up, then they say, well, now we see a bubble, and then we have to react.
Correct.
So what do you think the most important message then is for your average Australian who might be watching this show?
Well, I would say that, you know, think for yourself, right? Be very careful about who you believe, particularly in the mainstream media, because from what I can gather, they have to, say what suits, either the people that pay for the advertising or suit the government, if you're the ABC. and be more cautious. I definitely would be more conservative. Don't be a victim of FOMO, fear of missing out, right?
Right.
Because then you will have the problem later on of FOMGO, fear of not getting out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would take a more cautious approach in my personal finances, and for example, don't assume that if the bank gives you a loan that is in your interest, mainly because they want to make money, right?
Yep.
So I think that's the bottom line. Be a lot more. You've got to do your homework and be more careful.
Well, thank you, Wilson, for that. And John, just to close this out, what's your reaction to what you've heard from Wilson, and what does that tell you?
So obviously I've known Wilson for about 18 months, 2 years. So I just want to be clear to the viewer. So Wilson and I have had numerous discussions, before today. But I think one of the assumptions I hear from Australians consistently when I talk about Armageddon, the government won't let it happen. And what I think is important for the viewer to know is we have an insider saying the government's not running the show. They have been running the show for the last 20 years. It's the banks. And the government is just there to react once something blows up. And by the time it blows up, it's too late for the average Aussie who may be, who may have too much debt. So again, there is among those who, because all of our viewers have, I get these emails all the time. Our viewers say, I try to talk to my parents, my work colleagues, my friends, something's wrong, and everyone says nothing's wrong, or the government won't let it happen. Too many Australians still trust the system, and someone who is in the system saying, don't trust the system. And I think that's the key point.
John, Wilson, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Martin North, John Adams, Wilson Tsai, in interest of the people. We'll see you next time.